Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on WCTCAM or RestaurantGuysRadio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Marky.
Hey, Francis. How are you doing?
I'm just grand, thank you very much. Just grand indeed. I think we should talk about something that we've been appraised of. We went down last October, was it? September? August?
A while back.
We went down.
Let's just go with a while back.
Went down to
South Carolina.
Charleston, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were in Charleston, South Carolina. Lovely city. Lovely city.
Really nice town.
And we went, there's a very famous chef down there by the name of Bob Wagoner, who owns some of the best restaurants in South Carolina for many years.
Worked in France for a lot
Michelin
of years.
Michelin-starred restaurants in France prior to that. Was an American chef who owned a restaurant in France.
Michelin-starred restaurant in France,
crazy,
yeah.
Right? First one ever. Now, he's a very nice fellow, and they invited us to come down and sit on a panel for a show that he's doing called You Cook. That's the letter U-Cook, C-O-O-K. And that's going to be, we're not sure exactly the schedule yet.
Well, it's going to be on PBS, and it starts just right about now. It's going to be starting next few weeks.
But wherever your PBS stations are, that'll be different. You have to look it up online. Line to check for the schedule, but we'll be panelists on
the three shows that Francis were on will actually be in season two. They won't be in season one.
Well, I was only on two shows.
You
right?
were on two. I was on three.
And Mark stayed. They asked Mark to stay. Actually,
they liked me better.
They always like the big guy. The chef always likes the big guy. I don't know what
about. Francis had stuff to do at work, and
one of us had to come home.
One of us had to come home, and I drew the long straw.
Yeah. And I tell you, I watch this on TV and I always think, faces made for radio. okay, here's a great idea. This is from a trade publication called The Restaurant Business, right? But I thought it would be an interesting thing to share with everybody. This is a company. Here, let me read this right. Based on average consumer price index, today's $6.49 basket of fish and chips would cost about $20.77 in 2038. So if we keep going, in 2038, that's what a basket of fish and chips will cost, $20.38. In Seattle, there is a company called Ivar's Seafood Restaurant. So it's I-V-A-R-S. What they're doing is they're planning their 100th anniversary. It's a 29-location restaurant chain. On their 100th anniversary, that will happen in 2038. And so what they're doing is they're offering people futures. So you can pay $6.49 and buy a unit that's good for a basket of fish and chips that you can turn in anytime between now and 2038 and get a basket of fish and chips, regardless of how the price goes up.
That's funny.
It's like the forever first class stamp, but for fish and chips.
That's really cool. Forever fish and chips. I like that.
As long as the restaurant chain lasts another 29 years. If it doesn't, you're out the money.
I actually have a better idea for
our
restaurant.
What was it?
You know how restaurants do this, like on their 20th anniversary, they do this rollback pricing?
Mm-hmm.
I think that what we do is roll forward pricing.
Yeah.
So, you know, this fish and chips is going to cost $20.67 in 2038. You can get it now for $20.38.
I think you've become a little jaded by the restaurant business. I think that the last couple of years have been a little tough for us, and you just got a little jaded there.
It's harder now than it used to be. I'm not going to lie.
Actually, it's getting easier again,
yeah,
but
true.
It was really hard
for a couple of years.
Oh, my
really
goodness.
Tough.
Yeah, well.
I'm glad the world is becoming a better place again, and you know there's all sorts of unrest all over the place, but people are coming out of their shells again and coming out of their houses.
You're talking specifically about the restaurant economy.
Absolutely, that is exactly what I'm talking about, and getting back out and celebrating again, and you know, just generally enjoying themselves again. People don't have that look on their face anymore.
Yeah, no, it's better. It's much better, and it's better for us too. Anyway, so we're going to have on the other side, just coming up shortly, Kevin Zraley. Kevin Zraley was a big influence on me in my wine career, and by extension you as well. And he has a new book out called The Ultimate Wine Companion, and we'll be back to talk with Kevin in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we are pleased to welcome to the show once again our old friend, Kevin Zarelli. Kevin is one of the foremost wine educators in the world. He has written the Kevin Zarelli Windows on the World Wine Course book, which we have used to teach our staff and used in many consumer courses over the years. It is the best-selling wine book in the world, and his new book is The Ultimate Wine Companion, The Complete Guide to Understanding Wine by the World's Foremost Wine Authorities.
Hey, Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Hi, guys. It's always a pleasure to be here. And the most important thing I'm sure that your listeners know about why we all get along is because of your, the fun that you want to have. You have a passion. I know you both have a passion for the restaurant business and the wine business, but having fun and doing and talking about it is great to be on the show.
You know, it's great to have you on the show, and it's funny because fundamental things that started me in the wine business was a guy who now works for me, owned his own restaurants for years and then sold his restaurants and kind of got bored, so he comes back and he's a maitre d' for us. I worked for him many years ago, and he took your wine class, your consumer wine class, back in, I guess it was 1989, 88.
Oh, it's got to maybe even before that.
And then I took your class. Oh, yeah, it was 87, something like that. And that was the beginning of our relationship, and you... You had a lot of fun teaching your class, and I've never really lost that. You know, there was an old Frank Pryor article from 1984, and he said something
about... You just keep telling people how old you are. Keep going.
He said something about, and you handed it out in your class once, and he said, he was talking about the furrowed brows of lightly trained wine types, and then what he said was, remember, when the fun is gone, the game is over, you know, and that's it.
Well, there's a couple things I want to say, Francis. When people come up and they tell me that, you know, that you said to say hello,
uh-huh.
I don't say, I don't know who Francis is. So you can send all your friends over. Francis? No. Jersey? No. Restaurant? I have no idea what you're talking about. And giving away my age, Mark, thank you. It's really important. This is great. I just turned 60. And I got to tell you something. You know, what they say is that the new 60 is 40,
mm-hmm.
or something, whatever they say. The new 40 is, no, it's got to be 60.
60 is the new 40. We got
okay,
it.
Thank you. 60 is the new 40. I feel 30.
Yeah.
I really do feel 30. I'm going to let you know this right now. I haven't announced this yet. I can still hit, I'm a basketball coach, by the way. I can still hit many, many three-pointers. Okay?
Really?
I can throw a football 40 yards. I can kick a field goal, 35-yard field goal, and I'm sure I could hit a home run at Yankee Stadium if I had the right pitcher.
No.
But my point is, when I hit 60, I got to look in the mirror and say, you can't be 60. It's not fair. And that fun thing that you're talking about, I just brought that up in the class on Monday night, you know, that my passion is as strong as it's ever been.
And the youth comes from the resveratrol in red wine.
Well,
you're going to be an example.
I know what it is, Kevin. Having never owned restaurants.
Oh.
Because for me,
you know what? That's funny you should say that. You know, Joe Baum created Windows on the World. Now he also created so your listeners understand. Joe is no longer with us, but in the early, he created the Four Seasons restaurant in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
Still there. All the great restaurants like the Forum of the 12 Caesars and like La Fonda del Sol, the first Spanish restaurant. You know, it was unbelievable. But he was sort of like my mentor, one of my major mentors, and we'd sit there and have father and son talks, and he'd say, Kevin, never go into the restaurant business with your own money.
Yeah, wish I'd known that.
Don't do it. Financial suicide.
I really wish I'd known that.
Yeah. Well, how's the radio show going?
It's going great. And you know what? Can I tell you that we will hit, and our restaurant will have its 19th anniversary in April, on Memorial Day weekend, 2011.
But each of those is like a dog year, Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. I've aged
so,
27
years.
So
I'm about 117
no,
right
we,
now.
We've aged about 27 years in the 20 years we've owned restaurants. But, yeah, 19
well, that's
years.
That's an accomplishment, though. You guys, I mean, I don't think the listeners understand that 50% of all restaurants fail within 1 year. That's
yeah.
a national statistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's 75% of them, or maybe it's even higher than that, fail within. I think it's 90% of all restaurants fail within the first 5 years.
Yeah, 90-something percent are out within 5 years.
Yeah, so... Come on, 20 years. I
yeah,
think
no.
It's time to open up the champagne.
Yeah, we're pretty
you
happy.
You can pretty much count
all the roses, guys.
Kevin,
Yeah.
I know you know us, so one of the things you know is we've been opening the champagne
for 19 years.
We never stopped opening.
You probably have it open right now, don't you guys?
If it weren't for a sense of humor. All right, well, so I want to talk about your new book, Kevin, The Ultimate Wine Companion, which is a radical break from any book you've done before. And we had you on when you did your last book. But your first book is the best-selling wine book in history. How many millions of copies?
Well, you know, I don't track that.
Do you just cash the checks? I don't track that.
Oh, that's those checks? Is that what that
was?
Yeah,
yeah.
Damn, I didn't know that. But no, the publisher. I can only go by what the publisher tells me in there. Say it's coming up on 4 million right now.
4 million copies. Can you imagine? And
you sold 100,000 because we give one to every single employee who we hire. So that's got to be 100,000.
Yeah, let's talk about staff.
I mean, 19 years we've been buying 30 books a year, and I'll tell you, in all the years that we've been doing it, it's not just that I'm familiar with the book because the book is updated and changes all the time, but it is the best wine primer. If you want to get into wine and sort of fill in some holes in a basic platform from which to launch yourself to go on and learn about wine, it's the book.
But seriously, Kevin, what we do in the restaurant is we hire, a lot of times we're hiring relative novices because we're trying to hire the right type of person rather than necessarily based on some experience in some bad place. So Francis and I, the first thing we do is we issue your book, and this is a true story, I'm not blowing smoke, is on your first day you get a tie and you get the Kevin Zarelli book, and that's our primer for all the foundation that's the foundation we lay for everything else we want to teach people about wine and food and spirits and service and hospitality. All of those things start with your book.
Well, first of all, I do thank you. My family thanks you. But I don't know if you know the story, but I send a lot of people there to get jobs just so they can get the tie in the book.
I was unaware.
That's why your turnover ratio hasn't been very good.
Well, if you don't come back, we deduct from your paycheck. But the what was I going to say? Oh, so the book, the Windows in the World Wine Course book, you published the 25th anniversary edition of the Windows in the World Wine Course book a couple of years back now, but it was not on the 25th anniversary of the Windows in the World Wine Course.
No, the Windows in the World Wine Course is now celebrating its 35th anniversary.
So
I started teaching the wine school in 1976.
Mm-hmm.
The book didn't come out until 1985.
Okay, so why did you release the 25th anniversary edition of the book later than the 25th anniversary?
No, it actually was. The 25th anniversary of the wine book.
Of the book.
Would be 2010.
So it was a major rewrite.
Oh no! It was beyond that. I this is very important because you know your listeners are in the metropolitan area. This is I really don't mind talking about this as we come up to the 10th anniversary of September 11th. I'll actually tell you one thing that's really doing really good for my heart and my soul and my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Is I come through the Lincoln Tunnel to get into New York, and you know for 25 years I saw the World Trade Centers. There you are going in the Lincoln Tunnel. There were the World Trade Centers.
Right.
Well, last week for the first time, I saw. I didn't see the top of the World Trade Center yet because it's on the 60th floor, but I saw the cranes.
Oh, that's great.
The cranes you can see now from the Lincoln Tunnel.
Mm, that's great. Yeah.
And the cranes are in the shape of a V. And the V to me is victory.
Yeah.
They don't mean any of that stuff. I'm sure the cranes are set up just to bring stuff up. But anybody who's going through the Lincoln Tunnel in the next couple of, I'd say weeks, the way that they're going, you're going to be able to see the new One World Trade Center. So, you know, life does continue on. And the thing that, the reason that I wanted to make the 25th anniversary edition of the Windows in the World Complete Wine Course the most important work I've ever done is because Windows never had a 25th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
It was scheduled, ironically, it was scheduled for October of 2001 with the opening of the new wine cellar.
Oh, man.
So we never had it. We never had that 25th anniversary. So I said, this is it. I've been doing this a long time. So what did I? Well, I went out and I went around the world. I went to 15 countries. I went to 400 wine regions, and I tasted 6,000 wines to write the 25th anniversary edition. I did it all in 1 year of the traveling. So pretty much I'm the best I'm ever going to be right now, because I don't know how many people could have done that, had the time to do it, to go around to all these, 400 wine regions. There's 800 in the world, and, but you know the 400 regions I went to.
That's a lot of planes, trains, and automobiles.
It was painful, actually.
Yeah.
But it was necessary, and then I had to come back and write the book. And I'm very excited about something, and it hasn't happened yet, but it will be coming out in the next month. You know, everybody's gone electronic on their books, and I could have gone electronic already, but we're going one step further. It's called electronic enhanced version. So if you have your iPad or a Nook, and you buy my book on there, you can't do it yet, but in the next couple of weeks or a month, you'll be able to do it. It's video, so we've already done all this work. So you want to learn about wines of Italy? Well, I speak for 10 minutes on the wines of Italy, and then you go through the book.
Oh, that's awesome!
Great.
That's awesome.
So I'm excited. It's the first time I was ever ahead of technology. I had it done 6 months ago, but they couldn't get it up onto. So now. It's sort of exciting.
Well, that's really cool.
I want to point out for those of our listening audience who don't know about restaurants in New York, that Windows in the World was indeed the restaurant that was on the top of the World Trade Center that was functioning right up until September 11th. And that was, if you didn't know that, that would give you the backstory that you need to understand what
I
was saying.
You know, I grew up in North Jersey and literally could see the World Trade Center from my backyard, every day. So driving into New York with that missing has just been this kind of ominous, missing presence, every time, every time you see the skyline now. It's great to hear that those buildings are coming back up.
Yep. I was just down there last week.
And to look at and to talk about the your travels, as a result of your travels, the book has become thicker, and you've covered wine regions that, and this is something that's always interesting to me, folks who became master sommeliers or a master of wine 20 years ago, there was less to know. There was less stuff out there. I mean, there are regions of the wine world that, if they did exist, they weren't important.
Yeah,
and
China wasn't growing grapes.
Yeah, and Austria didn't matter, right? Yeah. So what were the in this new Windows in the World edition? I know you've added a few chapters. What do you think are the most striking, newly important regions of the world?
Well, as another way of putting it, actually, I just finished doing a 40-year perspective. I started selling wines in 1970, which makes me about 80 years old. Is that right, guys? You want to throw that in? Actually, I started when I was 19. But in 1970, I started, and I did a perspective of 1970 to 2010, which will go into the next edition of the book. So let's just take, for example, in 1970, there were only 400 wineries in all of the United States of America. There were 400 of them. Today there's 6,000.
Wow.
When I started studying wines in 1970, you only studied French wines and maybe a smattering of Germany. Like say 95% French and then, you studied German wines. Italy was not a factor. Spain was not a factor. Forget about New Zealand. They didn't exist. There wasn't anything in 1970. Chile and Argentina, political problems, all that kind of stuff, South Africa. So I call it as a witness to the revolution. Mm-hmm. And the revolution was not just with wine. The revolution was also a food revolution, mm-hmm. a restaurant revolution. Look at what we have right now, the quality farm-to-table kind of stuff that we're talking about, that every state in the United States of America has at least two wineries, that we are now the number one consumer of wines in the world. Not on a per capita by any means, but we are the only ones growing. 17 years now of increase in wine consumption in the United States of America, 17 straight years. Wine consumption in France and Italy and Spain is down 50% since 1970.
Wow.
So I hope that your listeners understand I'm a research analyst. That's what I do. I research my business to understand where it's going and where it's come from. So there's a lot of fascinating stuff out there.
Why do you think, and this just occurs to me hearing those statistics, why do you think that wine consumption is going down in those European countries?
Well, first of all, again, the reason that they used to drink wine rather because they couldn't drink the water. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about systems that we have in place here, you know, in the United States that they didn't have in those European countries.
I mean, true story. When I lived in France in the mid 80s, it was cheaper to buy a small bottle of wine than it was to buy a small bottle of water.
Right.
So at lunchtime, you know, just as soon have a bottle of wine as a bottle of water.
Well, the plumbing situation. I mean, if you take a shower once a week. I lived in France as well. The first day everybody liked me. The next 6 days they stayed away from me.
You were in France. They barely noticed.
So I drank a lot of wine. And so did they. It's interesting if you take a look, and I'm going to answer your question, but there's 306 million people in the United States of America. That's the last census. But where is the majority of Americans in what category? Well, the baby boomers are the number one category. 77 million people of the 306 million are baby boomers. And then the next category, which is really interesting for me in population size, is the millennials. Now, the millennials are 18 to 29, something to that effect. Well, there's 70 million of those. And some 30 million are not of drinking age yet. But the millennials in the United States have taken on wine as their beverage.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the French youth and millennials, et cetera, or the Italians and the Spanish have not. They have gone to drinks and beer. So they're not as their grandfather and their fathers and mothers were drinking wine. They're not doing that anymore.
I will say, earlier this year, Francis and I went to Italy and couldn't believe the beer revolution that Italy was having.
Different little birotecas. We
and real breweries in Italy for the first time, we'll say, ever.
Right.
It was
things are changing.
Surprising.
And the U.S. is, all arrows point to the United States of America. Every single country wants to be here. So if you did a map and you say Chile, they want to be here. Argentina wants to be here. Because we're the only one, that's the only country that's really growing in consumption. And, of course, we got a long ways to go.
And, you know, I talk with the growers from Mendoza Valley in Argentina, or especially. And there you have an interesting thing where, I attribute a disproportionate amount of the change of, you know, the super high quality wines coming out of Argentina to, I give credit to Paul Hobbs and Nicholas Catena. But if you talk about the fact that, you know, basically it took an American to go down there and say, okay, this kind of wine can't sell in the American market. We're going to clean things up. We're going to make a different style of wine and have different levels of quality. And you find that, or I find that an incredible amount of the wine that's made on the super high end in Argentina is for America. It's not drunk in Argentina that way. It's sent to the United States.
You know, let's even drop back before Argentina, and this is the funny way to put it, but I married an Italian. By the way, she was from Jersey. She's from Jersey. So I married an Italian from Jersey. I got three bambinos, I got one bambina, and I got an Italian mother-in-law.
By the way, then you have to come to our restaurant then. You got real street cred with us if you married an Italian from Jersey. She's welcome, and you can come.
Okay, good. So what am I saying? Italy. I love Italy. I really love the country. And when everybody thinks of Italy, they automatically think of wine, cheese, fashion, cars, whatever it is. But, you know, Italy is a perfect example of a country that is the number one, still to this day, the number one producer of wine. They are the second consumer of wine. But what does it come down to? 25 years ago, 30 years ago, Italy had to, after thousands of years of making wine, they've had to unlearn and relearn how to make wine for the global market. And so you talk about Argentina, no doubt about it. Argentina couldn't sell wine. Argentina's wine consumption dropped. They had to find another market.
Mm-hmm.
Italy's wine consumption was dropping. And so they had to find another market, and they had to, if you will, conform to American taste. I don't know if I would want to put it that way, but the style of those wines have changed drastically over the last 40 years.
Well, Kevin, I mean, you say that all arrows point towards the U.S. right now, and I definitely believe that and think you're correct. But mightn't that be because Americans are more open to wines from other places than other regions might be? I mean, the Italians, they don't really want to see a lot of American wine in Italy. In Bordeaux, you know, they don't even want to see Burgundies in Bordeaux.
Right.
Forget about wines from California. So mightn't that be just because not only do we want to produce our own wines, but we want to see wines from other places in the world?
I think we're totally less provincial than matter of fact, I remember going one time. I won't tell you who. This is 25 years ago. So that's not that long ago, as far as I'm concerned. I was with one of the top people in Bordeaux, one of the great chateau owners. And I said to him, I'm going to Burgundy. What should I see? And, he said, I don't know. I've never been there.
Wow.
I won't mention names, but trust me, you know who it is.
Yeah.
And I said, what? You never been to Burgundy? So, I mean, I'm an American. I'm going to Burgundy. Nope, never been there. The U.S., especially the millennials, are trying everything, whether it be Chile, Argentina. Oh, by the way, the best news, maybe from that whole trip of going around the world, is my opinion is this is the golden age for winemaking in the history of the world. Great wines are being made everywhere. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is, just like you talked about the sommeliers having to learn more, what about the consumer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now they walk into a store and there's 6,000 SKUs.
Yeah, but
it's overwhelming.
Well, but
actually, Kevin, pretty soon they'll just have a talking Kevin's Reilly, 3D, like
there'll
right out of Star Wars, a little hologram.
Hologram
of Kevin's
will follow them down the hallway,
talking to them about what wines they should
guys,
buy.
I'm doing apps.
If you're
I also wanted to make sure I threw this in because I want your listeners to understand from what I've gotten through this experience, which was an unbelievably action-packed experience, that the some of the best wines in the world right now are in that $10 to $20 range.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, under 10, they're fine. If you start going into that $15 to $20 range, you even spend as high as $25, you're going to get a $100 bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm. Or what would have been a $100 bottle of wine 10 years ago.
Whatever, it's a matter of taste, because this is what I do for a living is I'm always looking for the $10 bottle of wine that tastes like a 20.
Right.
I'm looking for a $20 bottle of wine that tastes like a 50. And you guys have the experience. I have the experience to say, look, I know what a $100 bottle of wine tastes like. I know what a $1,000 bottle of wine tastes like. This stuff is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings me to the silver lining to the great thing is there are more great wines in the whole world now than ever before. The downside of that, of course, is it's a more daunting task, but the silver lining to that cloud is the level of professionalism and knowledge among enthusiastic young wine merchants, sommeliers, is tremendous. There are a lot of people out there to help you now who really know what the hell they're talking about.
I was alone.
Yeah.
It was a very lonely experience when I came into New York in the 70s. There were no young sommeliers, that's for sure. And if they were sommeliers, they were in their 50s, 60s, 70s, or whatever, working at some French restaurant and only selling French wines. So it's great that young people have gone on for an education in wine. A lot of them go on to study for their master sommelier or master of wine. It's totally about face.
Well, it's funny because you said you were alone, and I was thinking, yeah, you were alone, and we all wanted to be you, and then we tried, and that's how we got. That's how you have a lot.
You got a lot of apostles out there.
Oh,
for
so
sure.
Many people that I know for a generation, somehow you influenced their career, or somebody that they learned from started with you. I mean, all of my friends it started at some point, went through the Kevin's Reilly class. And just to give our listeners a little perspective, when Kevin walked in as wine director at Windows in the World, it was the New York environment was as he just described. And here's this young, vibrant, kind of crazy man who becomes the wine director. It was the largest restaurant wine cellar in the world, right?
At the time, yeah.
So, and this is on the tail end of the sort of last part of a wine recession, right? I mean, so you're the guy with all the money who's putting together a serious thing when everybody's scrounging, and Windows in the World Wine Cellar changed the face of wine in the United States, to my mind.
Thank you for saying that. But the most, but really even more important than that is what we did with pricing. I actually sitting on my desk here right now for many reasons is the original wine list from Windows on the World, in Rolodex form.
Uh-huh.
Rolodex?
Yeah, I remember.
It's fascinating if I could share with you sometime the pricing, of wines, of what I paid for them, and what they would be charged, what I would be charged today if I could find them. But our whole concept of Windows on the World was low pricing, very very low pricing. So that's why I think we ended up selling. Having a big wine cellar is one thing, but we were in the business of selling wine.
Right.
You know, we weren't sitting on wine as window dressing, no pun intended. But the fact remains is, you know, we wanted to get the wines out, have people enjoy them, and so we cut our prices. Always. For all the 25 years that Windows in the World existed, we always had good pricing.
But I'm going to tell you, Kevin, for me, the bigger change and the one that Windows, I think, was most responsible for in that time. In that time, and we've talked about the sommelier types and the snooty sommeliers, they were everywhere in Manhattan. If you spoke to a sommelier, you know, he was trying to make you feel...
It was going to cost you.
And he was going to make you feel like you knew as little as possible so that he could intimidate you into buying whatever he wanted you to buy. The experience at Windows, and obviously, you know, the idea of the wine tasting menus and all those types of menus that came about from your place, the experience at Windows was more about, here, look at this cool thing, join me in this cool thing, as opposed to, I know more than you do, so here's what you should have.
Well, it's funny you said the sommelier that he.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That was true.
You know, it's 100% correct, true. But the great thing right now is even when I started my wine classes back in 1976, 90% were men. There's more women in my wine class now than there are men. And there's more, as we all know, with people like Mary Ewing Mulligan Andrea Robinson. I'm just throwing out some names of people, women who have done so well, not just in the writing field, but all the women winemakers, Helen Turley. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And so the world has totally changed.
I got to tell you, I took your class in 1988, I think.
Right.
It was 88. And one of the things that I totally loved about the wine world at the time, because I wasn't really looking to get into it as a profession. This was a passion of mine, and I was going to go be a lawyer. But I went in and I sat in the wine class, and there were like 400 people upstairs at Windows in the World. And I was 24 or something like that. And the room was full of hot New York girls at the wine class. And I was like, oh, this is totally great. I need to learn about wine. I was totally
amazing. By the way, Mark, you know this already, but, you know, Francis actually did fail the class. I have to bring this up because I just want people to think, you know, he's a hotshot wine guy now.
Kevin, I just can't help but think how much better my life would be if Francis had become a lawyer.
your legal bills would be lower, I'll tell you that much.
I want you to know that the wine school, so people who don't know, I mean, this was one of my biggest decisions ever in my entire life. After September 11th, we had already sold out the classes for the fall of 2001. I mean, do you continue them? And my thinking is, why? Why continue a wine school after the destruction, the deaths, everything about what was going on in New York? Anyhow, I was I still am in therapy, but my friends and family and Windows people said, no, we have to continue the legacy. There's nothing left. We have to continue Windows on the World. Very much like what happened in the bombing of 1993. A lot of people forget about the bombing. First American terrorist attack was at the World Trade Center in February of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
That closed down the restaurant for 3 years. But we still continued the wine school. Believe it or not, the wine school has run continuously now for 35 years. I then, through all my friends, et cetera, they said, okay, I'll do it. So it was October of 2001, we started those classes again. And now I had to obviously find a new location, and they're at the Marriott Marquis, in Times Square, and the general manager there, his name is Mike Stengel, he took the class, and, you know, he got in touch with me after September 11th, and I can't tell you what an experience it's been. The Marriott Marquis is like, it's just a fantastic place to run a class, and we're sold out. I'm telling you, I was in class on Monday. There was 125 people or something in the class, and so tell your friends. The classes are still going on. Great wines, terrible jokes. Very, very bad.
Well,
wines are good.
I actually had the great good fortune. Kevin and I were talking before we came on air. I had the great good fortune of seeing Kevin speak at a professional seminar recently, and it was a blast. And I'll tell you that in our classes, we take a lot of our cues from you and how to teach our own classes, which is to have fun and communicate the ability to have fun. And, you know, in learning about wine, it's like any passion. The more you know, it's with an eye to increasing your enjoyment and having fun with it, you know? I always say that wine can be used for two purposes that are quite at odds. One is people can use wine to set themselves apart, And the other is that wine can really bring people together. And I have no interest in the former, and I'm completely interested in the latter, you know.
Well, I have a quote on that. When gender means nothing, as we just discussed. Men and women doesn't make a difference right now. Women actually are the number one buyers. I believe it's 65% of all wine purchased in the United States are purchased by women. Women have a better sense of smell than men. That's a fact. So, but, you know, right now my classes are running like 50-50, 55-45. So the gender means nothing. Age means nothing. I have in my class right now a kid who's 23 years old. He's sitting next to somebody who must be in their early 70s. And it's fascinating to watch that whole thing happen, the dynamics. So we have people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. I had a guy last year in his 80s. So you're never too old to learn.
That's great.
But I also have come to the conclusion that politics means nothing, okay? Whether you're a liberal, or if you're conservative, Republican, or Democrat, after the third glass of wine, we all get along.
I'm in. Some of
you're
my
right.
friends take four to get there, but you know.
Okay, four. It could be, it depends on what you're talking
the
about.
The more difficult yeah. ones.
Right.
Hey, listen, Kevin, we need to take a quick break, but I do want to come back on the other side because I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about your new book, The Ultimate Companion to Wine. So will you stick with us?
Yeah, I'll stay. I'm here. I got my wine. I'm ready.
We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. You know, restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass, but I often find that a great glass of wine I order in a restaurant comes to me flat or even spoiled. It's been my experience as a restaurateur that wine preservation systems just don't work, until now. Now, Mark and I have searched for 20 years, and we finally found a wine preservation system that does work. Vinfinity system for restaurants and bars. Vinfinity keeps bottles of wine tasting fresh for weeks. It's got 3 U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. It never needs gas, it takes up very little room, it's easy to install, easy to use, and virtually maintenance-free. And the bottles don't need to stay attached to the machine, so one Vinfinity can preserve an infinite number of wines. We now offer dozens of wines by the glass at Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, and because of Vinfinity, we know that every glass is right when it comes to you. Tell your favorite restaurant about the Vinfinity system. If you own a restaurant or bar, buy it. Go to VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953 and tell them the restaurant guys sent you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the restaurant guys. You know, the thing about talking with Kevin Zarelli is you can never get to the thing you want to get to because there's a million different things to talk about. But before we get to talking about Kevin's new book, I want to point out that Kevin had received a James Beard Award in 1993. He was the winner of the James Beard Award as the Wine and Spirits Professional of the Year. This year he will be given a Lifetime Achievement Award by the James Beard Foundation. So congratulations on that, Kevin.
Well, I thank you, but I'm getting scared, you know.
Why?
Like, my life is over.
Right, you're going to die immediately after you're
done. You have to take these awards. I'm very honored, by the way, and I'm humbled by the award, and I'm thankful for the award. But you do start thinking, well, now what do I do?
Right. Does that mean you're done if you get a Lifetime Achievement Award?
I'm done. You'll never have me on your show again.
Nothing else counts after you get this award. No, I think that's great, though. That's a very important award.
And really deserved.
I should let people know what it's about, because it's the Academy Awards, Oscars, whatever you want to call it, of our wine and food restaurant business. And, this is a black tie event. It's at Lincoln Center. It's 3,000 people. And it's the envelope, please. Here are the 5 nominees for the top chef in the United States of America.
Right.
And here they are, the nominees, and now comes, some Wolfgang Puck and somebody else, and the winner is, and that's what it's all about. So it's not just a little award. It's probably the biggest that you can get. And I must tell you, it's very, very important, because you guys know me. I didn't solicit for this. This wasn't even on the radar. They called me. I thought they were asking me to help them with their wines, for
uh-huh.
the program.
Uh-huh.
Most of the awards, this has been going on for 21 years right now. I've gotten to famous, real famous, deserving people like chefs like Jacques Pepin, or Joe Baum, who created Windows on the World. This is the type of people.
Eric Repair's nominated for like 5 awards this year.
You know what? I've got to look at it now, Eric. I mean, what he's done as well. I've actually counted up. I'm over 500 right now of the people that deserve this more than I. But no, I'm not going to accept it for myself. I would never do something like that. I'm going to accept it for a couple of. I'm going to accept it for you guys, me, for wine consumers, for the wine writers, for the sommeliers, and it's also very, very important. Only two other wine people have ever received this award, Robert Mondavi and Ernest Gallo. And luckily for me, I was able to work with both of them in different ways. But they're both winemakers, and they're both from California. And even though I grow grapes and make wine, I don't think anybody wants to drink my stuff. So this is a real New York thing. It's a real, if you will, that the metropolitan East Coast, whatever you want to call it. So to me, it's an award that goes to, and New York City is my personal opinion is the wine capital of the world. You were talking about before about buying wines that in France are not going to buy American wines. But in New York City, I can get any wine I want. You know, you guys know that. That's when you come into all the tastings here.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I say to the classes that I teach all the time, I say, you know, you happen to be living in the greatest time for wine in the world, and the greater New York wine market is the greatest wine marketplace ever anywhere in the history of the world. You know,
yes.
you can get anything.
Everything comes to New York second. It goes to its own region first.
Right.
And New York second.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
We get stuff that they don't even get in their region.
That's true.
Ever.
That's really crazy true. All right, well, let's talk about your new book, Kevin. Let's, you know, because I'd imagine you'd like to sell a couple. That would be nice. It will take you a while to get up to 4 million, which is what your other book is. But this is a beautiful book, and it's different. This is not necessarily a primer or an educational book. It's a collection of essays and different pieces that you put together. What was your thought behind the book overall?
Well, you know, I just found out about this James Beard Lifetime Achievement Award, and it's interesting that I decided to write this other book. And this took years to write this book, and I didn't really write it. As you can see, I've selected what I would call the best chapters out of authors' books or an article that they wrote. These are all many of them my mentors. When I accept that James Beard Award, I will say it for a lot of listeners won't remember this person, but Alexis Lachine, being one of them, one of the great wine people before me who paved the road for me, as long as another guy named Frank Schoonmaker, and whose article is in the book, in 1941, trying to convince California wine producers not to use the name Burgundy, use the name Pinot Noir. Look where we are today. You know, to Alexis Bespaloff, who was the New York Magazine wine writer, who's in the book, Ab Simon. These are names that maybe your listeners don't know, but, you know, you guys know and people in the business know Ab Simon, who was Seagram's Chateau and Estate, and what he did for wine. None of those gentlemen are with us anymore, but they deserve to be recognized. And now, with that said, it's interesting that all of those people are in my book. I actually did try to organize the book into a way of understanding things, in almost a book form, because I chose who I thought was the best writer on Burgundy wines, which is Clive Coates. I think one of the best wine writers on Bordeaux would be Robert Parker, but he did something else in the book, and so I used Michael Broadbent and Karen McNeil. Who is the author of she's competition, guys, but I'm letting you out right now, you know, with her wine Bible to do Napa. She lives in Napa Valley. Here's my other competition in my books, you know, Wine for Dummies by Mary Ewing Mulligan and Ed McCarthy. And they did the whole Italian, not the Italian chapter, but they did the Piedmont. So it is broken up, so it can be used as a learning tool, not just a thrown together essays.
Well, let me just read for our listening audience. It's broken up into a collection of essays that are broken up as follows. Part one is Thoughts on Wine, which is about wine in general. And part two is on tasting wine. And this would be it starts with Kevin's own essay about the basics of wine and how to sort of understand and categorize wine so you know what you're drinking. Then there's a section of essays on wine and food, one on making wine, and then the last two are divided into Old World and New World. And you know, it's funny because in my wine class, there have been so many great books written about wine that I recommend to people that they read. But I always held up two books, and one was always your book, which I used in, as a basis for my extended consumer classes. For the when I do a whole course, we'll use your book or to my staff. And I say, this is, you know, the how-to of wine. And I would always hold up Kermit Lynch's book on the wine route.
Adventures on the Wine
Adventures
route.
Adventures on the Wine Route, mm-hmm. Right. And I don't even know if that's still in print. But that was always the, you know, and this is how you fell in love with wine. This is like the philosophical why you would want to do this. And, you know, I think your book really covers that aspect, your collection of essays here. Really, it doesn't teach you specifically how to do wine, how to understand a specific wine region. It's not a lesson. But it really is about the soul of it all. You know, it's about the larger questions of why you would want to do that.
Well, you mentioned Kermit Lynch. I put him in the book.
Yeah.
And if you read Kermit Lynch's part of from his book, it's all about a winery in the Rhone Valley in France called Vieux Telegraph, the Chateau Neuf de Pape. And it's a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you take a look at Robert Mondavi, you know, he's in the chapter of how to taste. How did he learn to taste? He learned from his mother. You know, if you read the Baron Philippe Rothschild, who was the owner of Chateau Mouton Rothschild, it's all about his first vintage at 21 when his parents sent him from Paris down to take care of the farm down in Bordeaux. And what it was like for him when he went down there, what it was like in 1921, and then what it was like to have to, you know, deal with people that didn't really want him there. it's funny stuff.
Now, the book is great, and as always, Kevin, it's been great talking to you. I wish you great success with this, and congratulations on your Lifetime Achievement Award from the James Beard Foundation.
Thanks, Kevin. We'll talk again soon.
Mark, Francis, as always, let's make sure that we only drink really good wine.
Extraordinary. Now, you can find Kevin's book and more about Kevin's wine classes at restaurantguysradio.com. Do check it out. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTCAM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. He is just the nicest damn guy.
Francis, do you remember before we opened, we were looking at building our own restaurant, and we got together with our third partner, Lou, and we were looking for a site.
Yeah.
We hadn't even picked where our restaurant was going to be yet.
Okay.
And you brought me to Windows on the World and said, we have to do a wine dinner at Windows on the World because they capture so much of what I want our restaurant to capture as far as stylistically. You know, I want, you know, to have this type of atmosphere at our wine dinners and available in our restaurant all the time. And we went to Windows and we did whatever, the 7-course tasting with wines, which is something we do in our restaurant every night now.
Right.
And have for almost 20
decades.
For almost 20 years, that came from you saying, you taking me and Lou to Windows and saying, this is how I want the structure of our restaurant to be as far as how we treat wine and food together.
You know what? I had forgotten about that until this very moment when you said that. I was just talking about building a 107-story building. I actually wasn't talking about that. But, you know, it's funny. Kevin, at the end of his first class, and again, you're talking 22 years ago now, he said something that I took to heart. He said, okay, do you like this class? And if you've got, steal this class. And he said, learn more, and then go teach this class in your own hometown. Mm-hmm. I won't mind. And same thing with the, he said he was doing stuff, and it was very, you know, very 21st century way of doing business was to say, you know, if you want to do what I do, that's great. You know, it's imitation is the best, most sincere form of flattery, and you'll do it. You'll add your own spin to it. You'll do it. You're not going to slavishly reproduce what I've done. But if you think this is a good idea, great. I do too. So, we owe him a great debt of gratitude.
And 1,200 students at our class in our classes since then.
1,200, you know, is that what it is?
It's got to be
it's 20 years of classes.
20 years of classes, but you know, 60, 70, 80 people a class.
Yeah, it's true.
In that range.
And in the early years, we did more than one class in a year.
That's true. I forgot about the fact that
we did
more than one
class. So I bet you're at about 2,000 students.
Yeah, it's got to be close to 2,000. You're right.
I feel so proud. Anyway, well, I hope you guys have enjoyed the hour as much as we have. These books are really terrific, and I would definitely go pick them up. I'm only about halfway through the Ultimate Wine Companion, but I'm going to finish it. So I hope you've enjoyed this hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com.